This is Berkeley Voices. I'm Anne Bryce. For UC Berkeley sociolinguist Justin Davidson, Spanish has always been a part of who he is.
So my grandparents on my mother's side enrolled my mom in Chicago's first pilot program of Spanish English bilingual education. I don't know why, but they did, because there was no cultural, linguistic, any kind of connection there. So my mom, from K-12, kindergarten to 12th grade, was part of a single cohort. So the ones before her, you know, the second graders above her, no, and the kindergartners below her, no, when she was in first grade. She was that one cohort where from K to 12, all of their curriculum was in English and in Spanish. And so with me, my mom spoke to me in Spanish exclusively until I was about three. And then she stopped and reverted to English.
His dad didn't speak Spanish, and few people in their community did. So it just got easier to not be the only one speaking a different language other than English.
So did I speak Spanish as a child? No. I understood some things, but then when I learned Spanish formally in school, starting in, I think, sixth or seventh grade, everything came to me quite quickly.
Yeah. Wow. I wonder if it was stored in your brain.
So I have plenty to say about that.
Yeah.
There are linguists now that we have such advanced technology to do fMRI, to do PET scans, to do all sorts of imaging of the brain. We can study so many facets of language and where and how language is processed in the brain.
Davidson is an associate professor in the Department of Spanish and Portuguese. When he teaches a course in psycholinguistics and neurolinguistics, he always shares with his students a 2014 study in which researchers looked at a group of people who were born in China and adopted by French-speaking families before the age of three. This group of international adoptees grew up in France as monolinguals, speaking only French. Unlike French, Chinese dialects have multiple sets of different words distinguished orally only by their pitch or tone.
So the question is, how do different speakers process tone, process pitch in the brain if they've been exposed to a language where that's very linguistically meaningful relative to languages like French, where, you know, au revoir, au revoir, au revoir, same word, no difference.
When the adoptees were older, between 9 and 17 years old, linguists played pseudo words or fake words for them while they were in fMRI machines. These words contain tones that are present in Mandarin and Cantonese and in several other Chinese dialects. And what researchers found was that for these adoptees, electrical activity in their brains was present in the left hemisphere, where most of language is processed. So their brains recognize the tones as related to language. But for French speakers with no exposure to Chinese, electrical activity was only in the right hemisphere, which has general cognitive acoustic capabilities. So their brains recognize the tones as just sound, not connected to language.
And so the idea is that the brain at a very early age has primarily linguistic faculties on the left hemisphere of the brain. And so speakers whose languages use tone or pitch in a linguistically meaningful way, those are the areas of the brain where pitch and tone are processed. And for everyone else in the world whose pitch and whose tone in their language isn't linguistically meaningful in that way, other general sort of cognition and acoustic processing areas of the brain are what's used.
In fact, electrical activity in the adoptees' brains was the same as it was for native Chinese speakers. So even though the adoptees, after they moved to France, had no subsequent exposure to Chinese and no conscious recollection of that language, their brains had effectively stored it for years, if not indefinitely.
So the brain is very sort of geographically organized according to the languages that we're exposed to as children. It's fascinating.
With advanced brain imaging technologies, researchers have learned a lot about where and how language is processed in the brain, and they continue to learn more. Since 2020, Davidson has been part of a research team at UC San Francisco that's working with bilinguals to map where exactly in the brain particular sound features of different languages are processed and stored. To conduct their research, the team is studying brains of people undergoing surgery to treat certain brain conditions, like seizure disorders or chronic migraines.
One of the medical solutions for that is to implant, physically touching the brain, a piece of sort of mesh electronic wiring that allows the person with a remote control to sort of send electronic energy shocks to the brain to calm it down.
The first phase of the project began in 2011 with two collaborators, Principal Investigator Edward Chang, the Chief of Neurosurgery at UCSF, and Keith Johnson, then a professor of linguistics at Berkeley, who's now emeritus.
So their original work, and with a National Institutes of Health grant, was originally working with monolingual English speakers. And so it was just those were the patients that they were getting that required the surgery. So again, they were looking at what specific areas of the brain process, i.e. where is electrical energy sent when you hear certain sounds. So I was brought into the picture because the type of patients that Dr. Chang was getting started, there's this big influx of bilingual patients. They weren't English speakers. They were English Mandarin. They were English Spanish. And so the thinking was, gosh, you know, we've already studied these really interesting components of how speech sounds are processed, where geographically they're processed in the brain about English. Now we can look at bilinguals. Now we can see, are monolinguals different from bilinguals in that way? Or for bilinguals, is the way that they process, now that they have two languages, is the way that they process sounds in those two languages the same or different? And what about a language that they've not heard before? So like all sorts of new, really interesting questions about where and how the brain processes speech sound with this group of bilinguals. So the majority were Spanish speaking. So I was, so that's where I was sort of invited to join the team.
During certain types of brain surgery, a patient is awake, so neurosurgeons and their teams can make informed decisions in real time about how a procedure will affect a patient's cognitive ability and language. For clinical studies like this, medical professors and students are present during the operation to coordinate the surgery alongside language tasks. And in this study, they play audio recordings of sets of speech stimuli that Davidson helped design. The set includes all sorts of word combinations that differ in how acoustically similar they are across the two languages, and also whether they share a similar meaning.
So these are, so for example, you have ropa, and that is not a rope, that is clothes.
Or soup and sopa, which sound similar and have the same meaning in both languages. Some of the words in the set have sounds that are acoustically similar in both languages, like S. But there are also sounds that are only present in one of the languages. So in English, for example, a lot of words start with sp, 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 like sprite or Spain. But in Spanish, these words start with an E. So it's esprite or España.
And so what's been going on then at UCSF is that we have these patients that are, again, bilingual in English and Mandarin and English and Spanish, and we're playing to them these words and these snippets of sounds from both Spanish, English, Mandarin, and other languages that they're not familiar with.
In doing this, the researchers are trying to answer where bilinguals store the sound inventories of their two languages, among other research questions. Although the research is ongoing, there are some new findings from the study that the team has documented and presented at conferences.
What they found was that when it came to the location of electrical activity for hearing the sounds across the two languages, that was the same. So the sounds in English and the sounds in Spanish, all relatively speaking, overlapping on top of each other. But there was a very striking language-specific difference when it came to the sequences of sounds. So when Spanish-specific clusters of sounds were just listened to, right? These people are just sitting there, but they're hearing this. They don't have to talk. They're just listening. This is sort of simplifying a bit, but like there's the Spanish location for the Spanish clusters, and then there's the English location for the English clusters. They were teased apart very readily.
So this discovery means that for bilinguals, the clusters of sounds unique to each language, so sounds specific to Spanish and sounds specific to English, are stored in separate areas of the brain, millimeters apart.
So that's to say, when you learn a new language, acquiring new sounds might be using the same sort of neural networks that are used to have acquired all the sounds that you've gotten prior. But when you have enough exposure to the language to learn the patterning of the sounds, which sounds tend to appear together, that information the brain stores, like the brain is attuned to that, recognizes that pattern, and stores it separately based on the different languages. So that's fascinating. The brain is an incredible pattern detector. And one of the patterns that it very clearly detects and like physically, electrophysically responds to is not just sounds in language, but their co-occurrence. Children that are exposed to two languages from birth will have different sound systems and grammatical systems than other kids that were exposed to one language at birth and another language later in life. And it's not, again, to say that one is inherently better or worse than the other, but it's that it's different. It's different.
Our language, the way that we speak it, he says, is a reflection of our past and present linguistic and social environments. And neurologically, our brains, too, reflect our sociolinguistic experience. I'm Anne Bryce, and this is Berkeley Voices. This is the last episode of a three-part series with Davidson about language in the United States. You can find links to the episodes in our show notes. Berkeley Voices is a Berkeley News podcast from the Office of Communications and Public Affairs at UC Berkeley. If you like what we do, please tell a friend and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We also have another show, Berkeley Talks, that features lectures and conversations at Berkeley. You can find all of our podcast episodes with transcripts and photos on Berkeley News at news.berkeley.edu/podcasts.